And tonight, our main speaker is Hilda.
My name is Hilda. I am an alcoholic. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to the newcomers. A lot of you. I usually try to remember the newcomer names, but it wasn't happening tonight. I was born in London. I want to thank Vince for asking me. I know Vince isn't here. And Stephanie and Ava and my friend Elizabeth, who are always good to me when I come to New York. I was born in London. I grew up in a pub, and I really did. My grandparents owned the pub. I'm an only child, an only grandchild, and the cellar was my playground. And only children are very good at entertaining themselves, as most only children will know. And that's what I did. You know, I was fascinated with alcohol from the beginning. I lined up the whiskey bottles on one side and the vodka bottles on the other, and they'd be chatting to each other, and I'd be chatting to them, and they'd be chatting to me. And they were still chatting to me in my 20s. But I loved it. I loved everything about alcohol, and it wasn't very long before I had to open them, you know. And I remember my granddad saying, you know, Hilda, you can't be breaking the seal on the bottles. You know, I can't sell them when you do that. And I thought it was like a challenge. You know, I thought he meant not to break the seals when I open it. You know, that's just the way my head works. And so by the age of 9, I could open a bottle of vodka without breaking the seal. And a part of me knew that was a gift from God. You know, I wasn't sure what it meant, but I knew it was good. Alcohol, you know, it talks about me in the big book. It talks about alcohol taking some of us quicker than others. And I paraphrase. And I'm one of those people. You know, by the age of 16, I had an ulcer. At 17, I got done for drunk driving. At 18, I had a heart attack. And 6 months later, I was in my first mental hospital. And that's when drink was working, you know. It all went downhill from there, you know. I was in 4 more mental hospitals. The last one, for being a danger to myself and others, I was committed for a minimum of a year. And I had been in my flat for 2 weeks, curtains drawn, answering machine on, 56 channels and nothing on the telly, and a fridge full of Asti Spumante, vodka, and Michelob Light, because I was watching calories. always. But for 2 weeks, I was happy. You know, I have a clear memory of getting into the shower one day with a cold McLight and drinking it in the shower thinking, it just doesn't get any better than this, you know. But one morning, my doorbell rang, and it was my mom, my shrink, 2 policemen and 2 nurses who put me in a jacket with really long arms and wrapped me up, and I came to at the Institute for the Living in Hartford, Connecticut. And I was committed for a year, and they kept saying I'd been a danger to myself and others, and I kept thinking, who were the others? Who were the others? I'd been on my own for 2 weeks, you know. So I was in the Institute for the Living. I was, and I have to tell you, those people are crazy. I knew there was something wrong with me, but I knew they didn't know what it was, you know. I had a roommate who was completely nutty. And she had these rage attacks, you know. I mean, it was really obvious she was unwell. She would start punching out windows and going for nurses, and, you know, they'd come in and they'd tackle her to the floor and they'd wet pack her and toddle her away, you know. And I knew she'd be away for days. Now, she had something I didn't have, and that was friends locally, you know, and they would smuggle money in. So we had money hidden all over our room. And when she'd get toddled away, I used to think, what a waste, right? All this money is just hanging about. So I used to go AWOL on her dime. And I really wasn't terribly good at going AWOL, but I went AWOL this one time. I had $50, and I went downtown Hartford, and this fella came up to me and went, psst, you want to buy a ticket to Prince? Now, I didn't know who Prince was. I'm kind of an AC/DC kind of girl. But I thought, you know, dark auditorium, this might work, you know. So I smuggled in 2 bottles of vodka, sat in the nosebleed seats, down drinking this vodka, thinking, they will never find me here. And I was right, you know. But I got out after the concert, and I wandered around the park in Hartford, and there were these winos sitting in a circle, passing this bottle around, you know. So I sat down with them, you know. And they kept looking at me like, stupid or crazy, you know. But they were good as gold to me, and they let me drink with them all night. And as dawn was rising, the white van with the blue letters up the side pulled up. Institute for the Living. And I stood up and said, you know, my ride's here. And, you know, these winos just looked at each other like, yep, crazy. You know. And, you know, this other time I went to AOL, I went to this pizza parlor. I was getting tired by now, you know. And I went to this pizza parlor right around the corner, and I start out really civilized, like a lady, you know. I get a slice of pizza and 2 pitchers of beer. And I sit down in this booth, you know, and I pour the beer into the glass, and it's all good, you know. And all the nurses from the Institute came in on their break. So now I'm down in the booth with the pitcher to my mouth, trying to get as much as I can before they see me, you know. That's really the type of drunk I am. I am a lying bedwetting whore. And and no matter what I did, I couldn't stop those things from happening. You know, I truly tried. I have a very odd, not odd really, because I've heard a lot of women share in Alcoholics Anonymous, I do have a reaction to alcohol. You know, I got out of the Institute for the Living, and my psychiatrist actually stood up before a board of psychiatrists and said, Hilda will never live in normal society. She is completely incapable. And he recommended I stay for a minimum of another year. And it took me a couple of months to convince the board to let me out, you know. And I got out in Hartford, Connecticut. And, you know, for a while that man was right. I was a complete lunatic, you know. I was in Hartford, I got done for drunk driving, drunk and disorderly, indecent exposure, and I thought, why did I ever leave England? It was so much better there, you know? And I'd moved back to England, and I'm a dual national, which means I can go back and forth, which I thought was a benefit, but now when I look back, I realize it just helped me stay sicker longer and lose my license in more places. So I go back to England, I'm not there very long, I get done for drunk driving, drunk and disorderly, indecent exposure, and I think, you know, I never should have left America. It really was better there, you know, and no matter where I went, those things always happened. And the reaction I have to alcohol is that when you add alcohol to this alcoholic, I have to show you my tits. And like I said, I am not alone, because I've heard some of the women in Alcoholics Anonymous share. But I also know that it's part of my alcoholism, because I don't feel the need to show them to you now. You know? So I'm back and forth, and I'm back and forth, and no matter where I go, these things happen. And I'm a blackout drinker, like our 10-minute speaker, and you know, I really thought that when I blacked out, I passed out. But I came to on the 3rd of January one year. My friend's birthday was Christmas Eve. Well, his birthday was New Year's Eve, so we started drinking on Christmas Eve, right, as you do. And I came to on the 3rd of January in my flat, stark naked. And the phone rang, and when I answered it, it was my friend Andy. And Andy said, are you ready to pick out rings? And I thought, excuse me? And he said, no, Hilda, not this time. Now, he brought over a video. I look great on this video. It's all the pubs we were in. It's all our friends. My father was there. Andy's down on one knee. He's asking me to marry him. I'm watching the video going, say no. Just say no. And I'm watching this video, and I realize that when I blacked out did not mean I passed out. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous and that comes as news to you, I'm really sorry. So I did what I did best. I went to the pub, and I'm chatting to some fella in a pub I'd never met, and he said, did you know if you go to Israel and volunteer to go on a kibbutz, they pay you £20 a month, they do your laundry, and you get 3 meals a day? I thought, result. Good Irish Catholic girl, Jewish kibbutz. It all made sense to me. I went for 3 months, I stayed 9, and I did 10 days in a Tel Aviv jail for drunk driving. And I can tell you that really bad things happen to young, vulnerable women who drink like I do. And, you know, I jumped bail, I ended up in Egypt, and really horrible things happened to young, vulnerable women who drink like I do. You know, I finally got back to England, went to America, and it was the same everywhere I went. And my father died, and my father left me a lot of money. So now I'm at the peak of my drinking, and I have money. I've gone from a case of Michelob Light to a case of Chivas Regal because I could. You know? My 80s is a bit like the Talking Head song, Once in a Lifetime. You know, where he goes, "This is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife. How did I get here?" You know? That's really what my 80s were like. I sort of came out of this really long blackout in a relationship, homeowner, in Harrogate, Yorkshire. And there's this this woman calling herself my partner, and apparently we've been together a little while, and she's commenting on my drinking. I mean, how rude. You know? But it was all going horribly wrong, and I was starting to, you know, the houses were getting repossessed, and I was getting ready for work one day, and I'm chatting away to my partner, and over her shoulder I can see them repossessing the car, right? And because I don't do reality very well, I looked her straight in the eyes and said, "You know, pet, I think I'll walk to work today." You know? But it was all getting bad, and I thought about my uncle, and my uncle was in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I was 18 years of age, he tried to 12-step me. You know, in a pub, he was buying the beer, so I let him talk, right? And I remember him saying, "You know, Hilda, in Alcoholics Anonymous, you need never drink again." I was 18. I was like, why wouldn't I want to drink? But he could see where I was going. And now it was all going horribly wrong, and I didn't know what else to do, and I thought about him. And he was still sober. And something about that kind of affected me, because he was what I thought a real alcoholic was. You know, he went to detox. I only went to mental hospitals, right? You know, he went to prison. I went to jails. You know, so he was always that little bit worse than I was. And here he was, still sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. So I moved back to America, because it was going to be better, right? And on New Year's Eve, 1989, I went to my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm sitting at this table, and they're saying, you know, "He's the father, we're the children." I thought I was screwed. I thought, if this is it, I'm in big trouble. You know, because I had searched. I'm a seeker. And so I'm in this meeting, and this fellow's sitting next to me, and he's one of these big, dumb Nebraska cowboys. He's got these big boots on him. And I'm thinking, because I can't hear anything now that he's the father with the children, right? I can't hear anything. And I'm thinking, I wonder if this fellow's boot size is bigger than his IQ. Right? I start taking everybody's inventory by their shoes, because I can't look at you. And as I was going out to the car, this big, dumb cowboy walks up to me and says, "Have you got a big book?" Now, I said, "Of course I have a big book. Doesn't everybody have a big book?" Now, I wouldn't have known a big book if you'd have hit me with one, but I couldn't tell him that, you know. And he went over to his truck, and he gave me his big book. And something about that really affected me to my core, because nobody had ever seen through me, never mind a big cowboy. So I'm going to get in my car. I'm completely speechless, and this little old woman runs up to me and says, "Did you know? If you go to a lot of meetings and you don't drink in between, can't get drunk." Thank you. So I'm getting in my car thinking, freaks. But as I was driving away, that woman's voice resonated in my head. And I'm driving away thinking, you know, she might have something here. If I go to a lot of these meetings and I don't drink in between, I might not get drunk. I might stay out of trouble, which was really appealing to me. So that's exactly what I did. And for 3.5 years, I suited up and showed up, did what was told, and didn't drink. Got a sponsor, picked the oldest, quietest woman I could find. Figured she wouldn't give me any problems. But at 3 years sober, that woman got cancer, and I know today she was the closest thing I had to a higher power. And when she was dying, I went to see her in hospital, and she said, "Just remember, Hilda, Alcoholics Anonymous will be here for you when you come back." I hadn't drank yet. And it was shortly after she passed away that I did. And I was in Florida. I'm on my way to a job in Germany. Walking on the beach with my partner, I think life is great. And my partner turns to me and says, "You know what, Hilda? Not only do I not like you, I don't love you drunk or sober." It's like, excuse me? I was completely shocked. So off my partner went. I walked into the bar. I started with double Jack, because that's how I drink. Started drinking on the Thursday, arrived in Germany on the Sunday, started my new job on the Monday, got done for drunk driving on the Friday, and woke up in a wet bed next to my new boss on Saturday morning. Glamour drinking. And that's how I drank for 9 months. My blackouts were longer, the people I woke up next to were uglier, the beds were wetter, and I knew I was in trouble. And on the morning after what I hope was my last night before I woke up in my own bed, which had become a bonus, it was wet, which was normal. I was still dressed from work. My tights were all ripped, and I went into the bathroom, and I was washing my face, and there was blood everywhere. And I had no clue. And I looked in the mirror, I had a great gash down my face, and I had that moment I had heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about. You know, the moment of those hideous four horsemen, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. I thought you were so dramatic. That morning, I knew who they were. And my heart broke, because I knew I could no longer drink safely. Not that I can't drink, but that I can no longer drink safely. And I did the only thing I knew what to do. I phoned English-speaking AA on the continent, and I spoke to a guy, Steve Baker, who allows me to break his anonymity. And I whined, poor old me, been to AA, screwed it up. Whine, whine, whine. And Steve said something to me that I truly believe saved my life that night. He said, "You know, Hilda, the most natural thing in the world for an alcoholic to do is drink. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we don't shoot our wounded." And I believed him. I believed him. So he told me where this meeting was in Hoensbroek, Holland. And my little head went, well, we don't want to tell them we're a newcomer. I don't want anybody to think I don't know what's going on in here, right? So I drive over to this meeting. I'm thinking about the meetings in Florida and California with the 200 people and about this size, where I used to go in the back and come 5 minutes late, leave 5 minutes early and call it a home group. So I'm toddling over to this meeting in Hoensbroek and thinking, what I'll do is I'll slide in quietly, sort of through osmosis. So I won't have to tell you I'm a newcomer. And what happened was I walked into the room. There were 7 people there. It's an hour and a half's meeting. And they weren't letting me pass, you know. 7 people. So when it came to my turn, I told them my sad old story. Poor old me, been to Alcoholics Anonymous, didn't work, whine, whine, whine. And the only other woman in the room was this big American Indian woman. And from across the room, they were looking for somebody to make the tea and coffee. You know, I thought, well, I hope they find someone, you know. And this voice from across the room went, "Hilda will do it." And I thought, Hilda who? You can't be talking about me. I said to this woman, look, this meeting is Tuesday, Thursdays, and Saturdays. And I said to her, is this Tuesday night? I said, I don't know if I'm going to be sober on Thursday. She said, if you want to make the tea and coffee, you will be. Now, my head went, who is this psycho woman and why is she tormenting me? But my mouth just went, oh, okay. Because I had no fight left. I had no fight left. And the woman really frightened me. She became my first sponsor. And if your sponsor frightens you, hold on to that. It worked for me for a really long time. I really thought if I drank, that woman would hunt me down like a dog. You know? So I'm in Hoensbroek, Holland, And I'm debating and arguing every step with this woman. To the point that one day she looks at me and she says, Hilda, when you read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, just read the black bits. There is nothing in between the lines. Because I'd say things to her like, I know what it says, but what they meant was, if you're new, don't do that. So I'm in Honsbrook. My company moves me to Belgium. I thought it was just a place on the news. I didn't know people really lived there. And I ended up suicidal in sobriety. Never heard anybody share about it. Didn't know what to do. Tried duvet therapy. Got home from work. Got under the duvet. Got up the next morning. Hope it all changed. It didn't, but I didn't drink. Finally, in the end, I gave up. I called my sponsor, looking for a little sympathy. Don't do that either. And she told me to blow the dust off my big book and get up the road to Brussels, because they have a meeting 7 nights a week. It's 20 minutes from you. And I went up to Brussels, and I told them how miserable everything was, and their coffee was terrible, and their literature sucked, and I was like, oh, this is... I shared all of it, honestly. And after the meeting, they gave me the literature commitment and took me out for coffee. And they saved my life, you know? When I moved to London, I got a job in London. When I moved to London, I did it all different. I had a service commitment before I arrived. I had a home group before I arrived. I went over every weekend. I did not get suicidal in sobriety. I learned about doing something different to get a different result. My sobriety has not been exactly textbook. At, let's see, 2.5 years sober, I gave up my career. I decided to try something different. At 3 years sober, I got into university. 4.5 years sober, I got my first tattoo. 5 years sober, I got a motorcycle and a bigger tattoo. 5.5 years sober, I had a motorcycle accident, so I got a bigger one. And started my second year at university. Because people in Alcoholics Anonymous believed in me. I didn't. You did. And when I was 6.5 years sober, my whole life changed. You know, I was on my way to a convention in the south of England, and just as we were walking out the door, my mother called, and my mom said that she had breast cancer, and she asked if I would go home when she had the operations, and which is a miracle, because my family never told me anything. And I went down to this convention, and I wasn't going to share it with anybody, because it's a convention, it's supposed to be a good time. And a fellow who got to know me very well, which is what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous, people get to know you. This guy knew me really well. He said, Hilda, will you share at the midnight meeting? There'll be nobody there. Old-timers meeting is going on at the same time. And I said, I don't know. And he said, you know, you look like you need to share. And I went to this meeting, midnight meeting. There was 200 people there. And for the first time in my life, I cried in Alcoholics Anonymous. 6.5 years sober. I had never cried. And I cried when I talked about my mother. And a fella I hardly knew stood up in the back of the room and offered me a flight home if I couldn't afford it. And something happened that night. I realized that I was part of more than a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I'm part of a fellowship, and I am in the middle of the bed. You know, and I was able to fly home for my mother, and when I was emptying her tubes one day in the bathroom, she turned to me and said, you know, Hilda, how will I ever repay you? Now, I had spent years asking my sponsor how I could make amends to this woman whose heart I broke. Broke her heart. My sponsor always said, in God's time, not yours, Hilda, and you'll know. You'll know when the time is there. You know, and I was able to say to my mom, you don't get it. 6.5 years I've been waiting for this moment. You know, that moment when I could be a daughter to my mother. You know, there's a phrase I love. It's... It goes, life is not measured by the number of breaths we take, but by the moments that take our breath away. And that's really my sobriety, are those moments. It's not really about the years, you know, but those moments. I was in New York, actually, in 2000, August 2000. I was offered a corner office in the World Trade Center, and I was going to be a god at my company. Right? Finally, they get to see my worth. And... I knew it was going to happen one day, you know. And at the time, my home group away from home was the Tribeca Center, and I went into this meeting, and on my way to the meeting, I phoned my partner and said, pack it up, babe. We are moving to New York City. And my partner, who's 3 months longer sober than I am, said, why don't you go to the meeting and call me afterwards? Then we'll talk about it. So I go into this meeting, I'm sitting there, and this guy taps me on the shoulder, and he says, do you remember me? No. I mean, I'm going to be a god. Why would I know this guy, you know? And he taps me on the shoulder and again, and he says, you know, I mean, you're sober tonight, and you shared at my very first meeting. And it meant the world to this guy that I was in town in the meeting on his birthday. And I realized in that moment that it wasn't about the corner office, and it wasn't about being a god, it was about being of service. You know, being of service in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, in June of this year, I got a card in the morning from my partner that said, congratulations on reclaiming one of those things that alcoholism stole from you, because alcoholism interrupted my life. And June of this year, I walked for my bachelor's degree, 7 universities, 20 years. But I start my master's degree next month. You know, that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the woman who is my sponsor today, I heard share many years ago, coincidence, I don't know, a friend of Julie says, is that odd or is that God? But 12 years later, she became my sponsor. But she shared at a convention in San Diego that the price of her dignity was the gloss being pushed across the bar. And I got that. You know, I came to you a lying bedwetting whore, and somewhere along the way, I've become a good friend, a loving daughter to my mother, and a monogamous, loving partner. I have my dignity today. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. For someone who came to stay out of wet beds with ugly people, today I'm winning, and I thank you for my sobriety. Thank you.